Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Obama de Blasio Pope Francis era. On this day when fast food workers are staging a nationwide strike over poverty wages, the president, the mayor, and the Pope seem strikingly on the exact same page, making inequality the centerpiece of their leadership. Now, we are expecting another live announcement momentarily by the mayor-elect, which we will bring you when it begins. We had yesterday's announcement of three top deputies live on the show. This one is at a community justice center in Red Hook, leading to speculation for the second day in a row that it will be to introduce the new police commissioner today. In fact, the New York Times is reporting that sources are telling them it will be police commissioner and it will be William Bratton. But until they actually begin, and they were over a half hour late yesterday from their scheduled time, let's talk about this moment in the city, the country, and the global Catholic Church. I want to start with a minute and a half of the speech that President Obama gave yesterday in a low-income neighborhood of D.C., in which he seemed to dedicate the rest of his administration to a primary goal of fighting inequality in America. Listen.
Since 1979, when I graduated from high school, our productivity is up by more than 90%. But the income of the typical family has increased by less than 8%. Since 1979, our economy has more than doubled in size. But most of that growth has flowed to a fortunate few. The top 10% no longer takes in one-third of our income, it now takes half. Whereas in the past, the average CEO made about 20 to 30 times the income of the average worker, today's CEO now makes 273 times more. And meanwhile, a family in the top 1% has a net worth 288 times higher than the typical family, which is a record for this country. So the basic bargain at the heart of our economy has frayed. In fact, this trend towards growing inequality is not unique to America's market economy. Across the developed world, inequality has increased. Some of you may have seen just last week, the Pope himself spoke about this at eloquent length. How can it be, he wrote, that it's not a news item when an elderly homeless person dies of exposure, but it is news when the stock market loses 2 points?
President Obama, yesterday in the Anacostia neighborhood of Washington, D.C. We are expecting Mayor-elect de Blasio, also focused on inequality, as you know, to make an announcement of more appointments momentarily. This is likely to be his police commissioner appointment and is likely to be William Bratton, who served under Giuliani and really under David Dinkins, too, as the transit police commissioner when that was a separate force. We will carry this live when it happens. With us now, Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Pura Politica on New York One Noticias, the Spanish language news channel, and Jill Colvin, senior political reporter for the New York Observer. Hi, Juan. Hi, Jill.
Good morning, Brian.
Morning.
So, Juan, if people thought it was kind of a quaint New York City thing that we elected a mayor focused on inequality, look what's happening now at the presidential level, the papal level. How do you see this political moment with respect to this issue?
I think it's all over the world. And right now, people are talking about that. I just came back from Argentina, the country where the Pope is from. And people are talking about that, too. And the government is trying to implement measures to stop that or to make it better for people with less resources, more or less successfully, the government is trying to do it. And we've seen after coming out of the Great Recession, the so-called Great Recession, how wages have stagnated and the stock markets all over the world are soaring. So I think it's a worry by many people all over the world and governments who want to fix this problem.
And Jill, one manifestation of it is this fast food workers' strike today in about 100 American cities to draw attention to their very low wages and ask for $15 an hour. Is it happening at many restaurants in New York?
It is. And we actually saw the protests, you know, I think starting in New York City about a year ago. And it was actually an issue that Bill de Blasio and many of the other mayoral candidates really seized upon as just one example of this dramatic disparity between the folks who are earning the most and you know, fast food workers who have to take on second jobs and can't make ends meet working full time. But I think it's really fascinating to hear how de Blasio's messaging of a tale of two cities and the way that resonated with New Yorkers really being replicated almost word by word, word for word by the president.
By the president of the United States yesterday and by the Pope. So listeners, is this the moment for a renewed focus on fighting inequality? By the mayor, by the president, by the Pope, 212-433-WNYC, as we wait for this de Blasio announcement any minute. And here come specific proposals now. Would you support, listeners, a $15 minimum wage for fast food restaurant workers? That's twice as much as they make in many places. Would you support a tax hike on the highest income New Yorkers for universal pre-K and middle school after school, as the mayor-elect is proposing? Would you support the living wage bill that Mayor Bloomberg opposed, but Mayor de Blasio will make a top priority? And we'll get into the details of that in a minute. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And to that point of the living wage, Juan, one of de Blasio's appointments announced yesterday was Emma Wolf, who will be the Director of Intergovernmental Affairs. And she said her first priority will be to work with City Council on a living wage bill, something Mayor Bloomberg has opposed. So remind us of the difference between the minimum wage, which is already scheduled to rise in New York to $9 and then I think to $10 an hour, and a living wage.
Well, living wage is that wage that is not asking you to get more benefits from the city or some resource, extra resources from the city, so you can make an honest living without having to be on maybe all the kinds of public assistance. So I think we're going to see that change in the next few years. It all depends also on who becomes the city council speaker. And we know that maybe the leading contender right now is a councilwoman from Manhattan, the Bronx, Melissa Marquez-Berito, who is really close also to Emma Wolf and who is in favor of that living wage bill that was stuck in the council for the last few years.
And tell us more about the living wage bill, Jill. This would apply to certain kinds of workers only, right?
Exactly. So the minimum wage would apply either if the city decided to raise it citywide for all workers. The living wage bill is specifically targeted to folks who work for companies or at buildings that receive big city subsidies. The idea being that if the city is going to be contributing tax incentives, if the taxpayers are going to be subsidizing these projects, that at least they should pay their workers a living wage. And another thing that the city council is also, the Progressive Caucus, which is really emerging as a major force, is also really pushing to push through in come January is also an expansion of paid sick leave, which passed through under Christine Quinn after, you know, years of delay. And they're hoping to expand that to businesses that have fewer workers.
And the fast food workers would not be impacted by that, just to be clear, because it's the specific categories of workers with companies that have some kind of either contracts or subsidies from the city, correct?
Well, that's actually a point of contention because one of the things, and this happened with the Kingsbridge Armory, it became a point of debate, is whether if, let's say, you are a tenant in a big stadium that's received city subsidies, if you are the McDonald's, should you be required to pay your workers more just because you're in a building where the developers have received those subsidies? So that's been a flashpoint and something that we'll see them probably debate over the coming months.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC as we talk about inequality as a political priority now in New York City by the President of the United States. We just heard that excerpt from his speech yesterday by Pope Francis, and the President referred in that clip to the Pope, de Blasio, Obama, the Pope, all on the same page. We are going to shift at any minute, but this is not up to us as to when, to talking about police commissioner appointments in New York City, as Mayor-elect de Blasio is expected to announce his police commissioner any minute at an event in Red Hook that is scheduled for 10 o'clock. That's eight, nine minutes ago. And when it happens, we will carry that live. All the major media organizations in New York, all the newspapers anyway, Wall Street Journal, The Post, The Daily News, also New York Juan, reporting that it will be William Bratton, the former police commissioner under Giuliani and transit police commissioner under Dinkins. My guests are Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Pura Politica on New York One Noticias, the Spanish language station, and Jill Colvin, senior political reporter for the New York Observer. And let's take a phone call. John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. John, thanks for calling.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. So when we talk about this minimum wage of $15 versus what it is now, maybe we can come to some middle ground of a minimum wage for New York State that's for all workers. And these companies, which we're talking about, are making lots and lots of money, and they keep these workers' hours down to a level where they don't have to provide benefits like health insurance and so on. I think that some of these companies should have to supply some sort of health insurance or benefits for these workers, regardless of how many hours they work there. So if you can have a population of workers that are all part-time and give them no benefits versus full-time workers who want benefits and a higher wage, I think that it's going to mess things up for everybody. And I think we should all be looking at this like chain of hope that's being created here that goes from Mayor de Blasio, who I met before, long before he ran for mayor here on the Upper West Side. Uh-huh. And I thought, you know, he's a real guy. Maybe we can get Andy in there. The president, the Pope, we've got like a nice little role there.
Andy, you mean Andrew Cuomo, the governor?
Yes, sir.
John, thank you very much. Let's talk for a minute about Andy, who I guess John is on a first-name basis. Jill, you know, he called into the show the other day, and when I asked him if he would consider signing the tax hike that Mayor-elect de Blasio wants on people making $500,000 or more just in New York City to fund the full-day pre-K and the after-school for all middle school students, he didn't commit to that, but he said he's committed to the idea. He wants to work with the mayor-elect on that. And he also said they would have an unprecedented close working relationship, unlike any other governor and mayor in our memories in New York City, and reminded us that they worked together when Cuomo was Secretary of Housing and Urban Development in the Clinton administration and de Blasio worked for him as regional administrator for this area. What do you know about how close they are and what besides this issue they may come together on?
Yeah, I mean, these men have an extraordinarily long history together, and the way that de Blasio talks about the governor, it seems like he really learned kind of his management style from the way that he was managed by Governor Cuomo when he was at HUD under the Clinton administration. The two of them have shared a lot of staff members over the years. They clearly have a close relationship. Fascinating to me that even his first deputy mayor that he appointed yesterday, his wife actually works for the governor at the moment. So there are links back and forth. It's very clear that both men have kind of a shared desire to pass some type of funding stream for universal pre-K. But remember that both of these men are also extraordinarily strategic and are both really looking for the upper hand here. These are the two men who want to be the top Democrat in New York City. Governor Cuomo suddenly has some competition. It would be very strategically beneficial for de Blasio to get his tax hike. It would really play into his whole, Tale of Two Cities thing. If the governor can come up with another, a monetary stream that doesn't require raising taxes in an election year, it could be a really fascinating dynamic between the two of them. Look, we've got your money, but de Blasio doesn't want it.
Ziad in Washington Heights. You're on WNYC. Hello, Ziad.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Juan Manuel.
And Jill, you're not going to say hey to Jill?
Hey, Jill.
Hello.
Sorry, I missed you there. Sorry about that. I think it's really interesting what de Blasio is saying about the living wage, because he's also talked about how he wants to reduce the draconian measures. I think they're draconian because I'm a small business owner in Washington Heights, on the violations imposed by city agencies. So now he's saying let's tell the small business person or business people to increase the salaries of their employees we'll alleviate some of the pressures that city agencies are putting on you, and now these workers can stretch their dollar and actually inject their dollars into the economy. I really think that's a better model. I think it's going to be huge for small business, which he's a big proponent of.
Thank you very much. And de Blasio does talk about this too, right? Mm-hmm. At the same time that he wants to raise requirements on all business owners to some degree with the kinds of things we've been talking about, he's also campaigned on easing some of the burdens in terms of the city using businesses as revenue raisers through fees and fines and stuff.
Yes, and I bet that was Ziad Ramadan, who is a former city council candidate uptown. And yes, and
that's why he said hello to you.
Yes, he was on the show a few weeks ago. I think that if this idea gets traction, and I think it is getting traction, all this economic opportunity, all this economic justice, and this change in style, and not so much in substance, because for the last few years, we've also had some progressive measures and laws passed here in the city. If the traction is there, then I think we're going to see, not only at the city level, but also at the state level, ways to really come about with this agenda, this progressive agenda.
And not everybody is on this same kumbaya page as the Pope and the mayor and the president. So David in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. David, thank you for calling in.
Yes, I think that this is a bad idea. And it's funny because none of the people that are proposing this have ever run a business. Obama, Mr. de Blasio, they've never worked in the private sector. And I think that if, for example, the black unemployment rate, which the liberals never talk about, it's 13.1%. Now, my question is, if you can't find a job at $7.25 or $8 plus like it is in New Jersey, how are you going to find a job at $10 or $11 an hour? And, you know, it's like, why not make it $100 or $25 an hour? There are real costs involved with this. And what will happen is fewer people will be hired that are low-skilled. And what you want, which I did, I used to work in a grocery store when I was a teenager, bagging groceries. You want to get some kind of work experience so you can then have a resume and you can get a better job. But if the minimum wage is too high, which I think it's going to be, then you'll never get that first job.
There is a tipping point somewhere, and the question is, where is it? David, let me throw a question back at you that kind of came up before in this conversation and comes up a lot, that below a certain wage, workers qualify for government benefits like food stamps and housing assistance and now Affordable Care Act insurance subsidies. So the taxpayers actually subsidize employers who don't pay their workers an above-poverty wage. Is that a dilemma for you? If you don't like tax subsidies but also don't like to regulate businesses, do you see that? Does that issue have resonance for you?
Yes, it does. But my throwback to that is that these should not be looked at as career jobs. These should be jobs where you are – these are starting jobs. They should. What we really need is economic growth, and no one. You don't hear Obama talking about this, and that's the reason I'm so disappointed in him.
David, I'm going to leave it there. I really appreciate your call. And Jill, at some point, there's a tipping point. If he says, as he says, if the minimum wage was $25 an hour, $100 an hour, it certainly would destroy jobs. And at some point, there's a tension between treating individuals with respect of something more than a poverty wage and a threat to growth.
Absolutely. I mean, it's always a push and pull. It's always a balancing act. But I think one thing that stood out from what the gentleman just said was that these are supposed to be kind of entry-level temporary jobs. And the problem is that for so many people, they actually are not temporary jobs. The average person in a minimum wage job is actually, you know, a middle-aged single mother who's taking care of a family. And if the government is coming in to have to subsidize those people, you know, that I think provides a compelling argument, not just for liberal progressives who are interested in, you know, the equality aspect, but among conservatives who really don't think it's fair for the government to have to be subsidizing these people.
We are talking about inequality and this kind of de Blasio, Obama, Pope Francis moment with the mayor, the president, the Pope, all on the same page. We are waiting as well for a de Blasio news conference where he is expected to introduce his new commissioner of police, police commissioner who is expected to be the former NYPD commissioner, Bill Bratton. We'll take a break. We'll continue all of this. More of your calls. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us. WNYC, as we await a news conference momentarily from a community justice center in Red Hook by Mayor-elect Bill de Blasio. This is expected to be the announcement of his police commissioner, and that is expected to be the former Giuliani police commissioner, former Dinkins Transit police commissioner, William Bratton. My guests are Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Puerto Politica on New York One Noticias, the Spanish language news channel, and Jill Colvin, senior political reporter for the New York Observer. And everybody is so confident now that this is what it's going to be that, Juan, I see you have some pre-action coming in from Al Sharpton.
Yes, Al Sharpton just released a statement saying that he had a long phone conversation yesterday with the mayor-elect talking about his choice of police commissioner of New York City, and it's going to be Bill Bratton. And Sharpton says that they had a very distant and adversarial relationship back in the day of the Giuliani era. But then later, when Police Commissioner Bratton worked in L.A., they worked together in topics of gang violence and police misconduct. So it's a lukewarm, basically welcome of Al Sharpton. And we can expect then, after seeing this statement, that there has been a leak somewhere for once. And we know that Bill Bratton will be the next police commissioner.
Are you surprised, Juan, that it might be Bill Bratton? I saw him on New York One earlier this year with your colleague, Errol Lewis, talking about his opposition to one of the bills that de Blasio was a big supporter of, to have an inspector general for the NYPD. He said he didn't like that. He wouldn't want hands tied like that of the police commissioner. I have a statement here, or a quote of Bill Bratton from, let's see, when was this? This was from some Manhattan Institute panel that Bratton was on this past summer, talking about stop and frisk. Quote, as it relates to stop, question, frisk, it is the most basic, fundamental, necessary tool in American policing. We cannot function effectively without it. It's so essential to what I and others work with in New York and L.A., how we use that tool and how we use it very effectively. And as we go forward, the idea is that we try to educate what stop and frisk really is and try to work within the parameters of what's set up by the city. That seems so off point to the whole de Blasio campaign on this particular issue.
Yes, but at the end of the day, it's a change in style but not substance, what we're looking at here with Bill de Blasio. That was the packaging of his campaign, the way he won the campaign. But we all know that Bill de Blasio wasn't going to be that leftist mayor or ultra-progressive mayor, and that he needed to calm the fears of New Yorkers. And now he has, picking Bill Bratton, an old hand, basically the guy who took the reins of the NYPD 20 years ago, handed over by Ray Kelly, and now also yesterday with the announcement of Anthony Shores, that is well respected by all kinds of people, the left, the right, and the middle of the road here in the city.
Jill, it's a fine political line to walk, to say on the one hand, this is a new era of police-community relations, and on the other hand, don't worry, folks, things aren't going to change that much.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just absolutely fascinating that Bill de Blasio is about to appoint the same man that Rudy Giuliani had serve as his police commissioner, considering that this election was so much a war against the Giuliani era. Of course, Bill de Blasio's biggest concern right now is appeasing folks who are concerned that he'll, you know, turn the city back, appeasing business interests, appeasing kind of the institutional forces in the city. But I think that this decision, and we're seeing it, you know, both in Sharpton's statement and the NYCLU also received a statement that says they're, you know, quote, optimistic, but clearly not jumping up and down celebrating this decision. I think you're going to see some frustration in a lot of communities that he didn't choose to go with some of the other options who were discussed, who were, you know, members of the minority community.
And remember, Brian, that Bill Bratton was a police commissioner here in the city with Rudy Giuliani, a Republican mayor. But he was also police commissioner in Los Angeles with a Democratic mayor, with Antonio Villaraigosa. So I think we can't really say, well, even though here in the city is really tied to that legacy, at the end of the day, he's a well-respected figure who even like also only worked for a couple of years for Rudy Giuliani before he was out of the job.
Jill, you just came, and we are expecting this news conference any minute. This seems to be a lot like yesterday, where they scheduled an 11 o'clock news conference to announce yesterday's appointments, and it started around 11:35 or so. So now it's 10:25, and we'll see when this begins, and we are still planning to carry it live. Jill, you just came from Mayor Bloomberg's final breakfast appearance before the business-oriented group, the Association for a Better New York. Did he and they talk about inequality, too?
You know, it was really an interesting speech. Bloomberg was there in front of so many of his current and former deputy mayors and associates, and he really gave this emotional speech, just kind of cracking up a little bit. But his, you know, that wasn't a major focus of the speech. He really seemed to be kind of looking towards the future, actually spent some time talking about inequality and how the city, you know, in the way that they spin it is actually doing quite well compared to other major cities. But his message was really one of hope. He talked about his coming. He's about to be a grandfather with his daughter about to give birth on Christmas Day. And really looked to...
Wait, it's scheduled for Christmas
Day? Yeah, I believe so.
Is this going to be a planned C-section, one of those things?
I'm not sure about that.
That's her due date, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But really talked about how he was optimistic for the future and that he hoped at least that the city's best days were ahead.
He was crying?
He was choked up. He at one point, recited a poem. He was talking about his hopes for the city. It's very rare to see Mayor Michael Bloomberg choked up. Now, of course, choked up for him isn't necessarily as, you know, emotional as it might be for other people, but his voice was cracking.
And so the language really changes as we change administrations. And I was struck along these lines by some of the language at yesterday's de Blasio appointments event. Listen to the mayor-elect in this 90-second clip. And, of course, if he starts today's event, we'll have to interrupt this. But this is Mayor-elect de Blasio, a 90-second clip from yesterday where he talks repeatedly in his introduction of his first deputy mayor, Anthony Shores, about values.
The values I've talked about are inherent in what has made this city such a great city, such a leader in the country, in the world. We want a government that represents the best of New York City and what New York City has always been about. With that framing, I'm going to introduce someone who I believe represents those values stunningly well, has extraordinary experience and extraordinary track record, and someone I've known a long time and have known for a long time. I shared values with and shared a common commitment to public service with. I'm proud to announce the appointment of Tony Shores as first deputy mayor for the city of New York. Tony is a leader of great character, great integrity, and great accomplishment. I am absolutely confident in his ability to deliver on the core agenda that I've developed over this last year. The unprecedented increase in early childhood education and after school that we're planning, the 200,000 units of affordable housing over the next 10 years, the reforms in police-community relations and the bringing together of police and community to keep this city safe, and obviously and fundamentally creating a balanced budget and addressing the open labor contracts that will be central to all we intend to do.
So he said values. He said shared values. He said core agenda, Bill de Blasio, yesterday. And then came the first deputy mayor appointee, Anthony Shores, who de Blasio says will be his right-hand man. Listen to Shores talk in terms of values, too.
Because I do think Bill brings an extraordinary vision of a progressive and a fairer and a more just New York City. And that's one I have shared my whole life in my work in the government and my teaching. In my research and my nonprofit work, it's always been around that same agenda. And so I want to thank him for that more than for anything else.
First Deputy Mayor appointee Anthony Shores. So Jill Colvin from the New York Observer, how different is what we just heard in those two clips from the language of the Bloomberg administration? I mean, we think of Mayor Bloomberg as a pragmatist and not an ideologue. But I don't know if ideologue and values, you know, values sounds good, ideologue sounds bad. But Bloomberg had an agenda too. He had values too, things that he wanted to accomplish that were based on certain principles of right and wrong. Is it just that the language is different? And is the language different, or is it that their agendas are going to be different?
Well, what was fascinating was that Bloomberg actually used the specific language talking about New York City values this morning in his speech, things like keeping the city safe. But we absolutely – I mean, these are two very different men with very different approaches. The Bloomberg administration has really tried to focus on metrics about measuring how safe the city's streets are, where crime is, you know, how well businesses are doing, and it hasn't really – cared all that much about, perhaps a strange way to say it, but how kind of people were feeling about the situation. And I think that we're just going to see perhaps more of a difference rhetorically than we're actually going to see, at least according to, you know, the two appointments, major appointments that we know with Shoris and Bratton, as opposed to a real difference in approach.
Let's take one moment. What did you want to say?
I just wanted to say that this is more about the education system and the global economic model. I don't think we're talking today about these inequalities just because of higher or lower wages or because of the stock market only. But it's also because coming out of the Great Recession, maybe the U.S. economy and all other well-developed countries' economies are not really ready to compete in the global economy, and that's because of the education system.
212-433-WNYC, and let's take another call. Ephraim in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello. Ephraim, Hi. Are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. What do you want to say?
I would like to offer the contradiction, which is sort of obvious. We cannot have minimum wage hiked up and at the same time open borders, virtually open borders for cheap labor coming from abroad. It's impossible to keep sort of decent salaries for American workers.
That's interesting, Ephraim. And Juan Manuel, he talks about a contradiction where on the one hand, the de Blasio Obama Pope Francis camp wants the minimum wage to go up. On the other hand, they're opening the door for so many what he calls illegal immigrants. And the more undocumented people there are, or maybe the more unskilled immigrants there are, the more downward pressure there is on wages.
I don't think if that's true. I don't think there are really accurate economic reports that are going to support that idea. I think it's more like Jill mentioned earlier, these jobs that we're talking about are entry-level jobs. And unfortunately, because of the economic model that we have right now, not only in the United States, but in other places in the world, some people get stuck in that sector, in that job market sector, and just because they don't have the skills to compete in the global economy, and also because the economy right now in the U.S. is now set up for a vast number of middle-class jobs right now.
We are getting official word now from the de Blasio folks that it is Bill Bratton for police commissioner. I'm going to get a printed press release handed to me in just a minute, but they are handing it out to reporters at this Community Justice Center in Red Hook where the announcement is going to take place momentarily. Bratton's going to speak, I presume, in addition to the mayor-elect. And the word coming now, and here's this press release, de Blasio saying, Bill Bratton is a proven crime fighter. He knows what it takes to keep a city safe and make communities full partners in the mission. Together, we are going to preserve and deepen the historic gains we've made in public safety, gains Bill Bratton helped to make possible. And we will do it by rejecting the false choice between keeping New Yorkers safe and protecting their civil rights. This is an administration that will do both. Unquote from the printed statement from Mayor-elect Bill de Blasio. So, Jill, he's presenting it as a false choice between keeping New Yorkers safe and protecting their civil rights.
Absolutely. And also, we've got a statement here from Bratton himself, and he says, quote, Mayor-elect de Blasio's priorities are my priorities, clearly showing that he is in line with Bill de Blasio, who probably has made very clear to Bratton the direction that he expects the department to go in.
So I wonder if that means those priorities include the broken windows theory of police enforcement, Jill, that by having a zero-tolerance policy on smaller crimes, which is really what the Giuliani-Bratton team became famous for at the beginning of that administration, you can bring down violent crime too. Turnstile jumping, minor marijuana possession, all these little things that if you don't let people get away with breaking windows in a neighborhood, hence the broken windows theory, then you're going to cut down on the violent crime in the neighborhood as well. Does Bill de Blasio sign on to that?
I mean, Bill de Blasio said, I believe, that he does support kind of the tenets of the broken window theory, but it's not at all something that you hear him talk about frequently. You know, Bloomberg has been very adamant in his opposition to graffiti. We've seen the MTA really crack down on turnstile jumping and on folks going between doors and subways. And that's not the same rhetoric that you've heard from de Blasio. His focus has really been on kind of repairing the relationships between communities and police officers. And his buzzword has really been, you know, community policing, which is something that you actually heard Bratton talk about as well during his tenure.
And let's remind New Yorkers that during the campaign, Bill de Blasio never said that he wanted to get completely rid of stop and frisk. That was John Liu, the Democratic candidate in the primary. He never said, Bill de Blasio, that he wanted to get rid of stop and frisk. He wanted to reform it. It's a change in style. And that's also why we're seeing today the announcement. The announcement happening at the Red Hook Community Justice Center. Instead of going to any other place, it's going to a community justice center, maybe to emphasize the change in style, but not the substance. The city needs to stay safe. Otherwise, New Yorkers will never forgive Mayor-elect de Blasio if numbers in crime go up.
But is he really going to the Community Justice Center now that it's 10:36 and this was scheduled as a 10 o'clock news conference? Maybe traffic is really bad on the route from wherever he's starting out to Red Hook. I don't know.
Remember, Bill de Blasio was also a city councilman. And how many city council meetings start on time, we don't know.
in the great tradition of city council meeting punctuality. Also in this press release, there's a quote from the director of the National Network for Safe Communities and the Center for Crime Prevention and Control at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, David Kennedy, who says, quote, "The most effective community policing is based on mutual respect between the police department and the people they serve. The hallmark of Bill Bratton's approach has been the creation of strong and meaningful relations with the community while reducing crime." So, Jill, it's just another way to put that same idea that it's a false choice between strong community relations and absolutely keeping crime at its minimum.
Yeah, I mean, you can absolutely make that argument, whether it, you know, the way that plays out on the ground is something else. I think what's also interesting about Bratton is that under, you know, the current police commissioner, Ray Kelly, there, from what I understand, was a lot of kind of tension between or basically low morale on the force. A lot of people were frustrated with kind of Kelly's top-down management approach. And Bill Bratton, from what we understand about him, really takes a very different approach to the way that he manages the NYPD. And I think that that change will filter down to officers on the street and kind of create the attitude change, perhaps, that Bill de Blasio is looking for.
Cassius and Bed-Stuy, you're on WNYC. Hi, Cassius. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Brian. Thank you. You know, Bill's his hallmark statement, obviously, so far is to keep talking about the whole pre-K policy for children. And, of course, it's, you know, who can argue with it? We want the best for kids. But the benefits for that won't be seen until years from now, frankly. We really need, you know, because we've been in this crisis for like 5 years now, we need ideas of, bold ideas for like training people of all ages all over the city for new work. We have such an employment crisis, you know. I really hope he can expand his ideas of, you know, social justice to not just be about little kids and the quality of their education. We need help. All ages of people all over the city really need a lot of help finding new work and creating new jobs.
It's a really great point, Cassius. If Bill de Blasio, Juan Manuel, is so focused on pre-K and middle school students as the key to fighting inequality, it's something that's going to come back in a generation, as the caller says. It's not something that's going to fight inequality for all the adults in New York City today, and by extension, by the way, for the way their children are able to live right now. When the Community Service Society, which annually does a survey of the lower third of income earners in New York City, did its survey this year, the number one priority that came back from that group was jobs with upward mobility. So where's the jobs agenda? If he's going to fight inequality, he can't just start with four-year-olds and say, okay, in 20 years, we're going to have less inequality.
But you have to start somewhere. And we know, we have the data that many Hispanic and African-American kids in the city, they start from a lower level from the get-go. And they are in a disadvantage with other kids in the city. So you have to start somewhere with this topic of economic justice and employment or jobs, good jobs for all. And I don't think the mayor of the city at the end of the day is going to have so much power as to change the whole economic model in the city or in the country. And going back to your point about the false choice that you see in Bill de Blasio's appointment of Bill Bratton, remember that he is, don't put it on him, put it on New Yorkers. Every single poll that we've seen throughout the election says that New Yorkers wanted a new direction, a change of style, but at the same time, Ray Kelly, his approval numbers were still in the mid-high 60s after 12 years as head of the NYPD.
How do you explain that?
Well, that's it's a change. It's Bill de Blasio won the election, making New Yorkers feel good about themselves, making New Yorkers feel good about the future and about the city. He sold hope the same way that Barack Obama did in 2008. That was a really strategic and really successful message that he was telling us, this is my family. This is who we are, and as a city, we have to move forward with a different style and taking into account every single New Yorker in the city.
Let me play one more clip of Bloomberg de Blasio, I should say, from yesterday, in which maybe he sounds a little like Bloomberg, describing the organization of his government. This is not a values-based statement. This is not an agenda-based statement. This is just, I'm going to run things well. Listen.
We want a clear, streamlined city government. We want clear lines of authority, clear lines of accountability. I want to make sure everyone knows what their position is, who they relate to, and how the pyramid works.
Why did he feel a need to talk about how the pyramid works, Jill?
Because, I'll put a guess here, de Blasio is somebody who's coming in with not as much management experience as, for instance,
Michael Bloomberg
did when he came into office. The number one criticism against him has been that he's never managed any organization of substance. He's been a career politician who's managed campaigns, last job in the public advocate's office where he admitted, you know, he had a staff of 30. And so his job here was to make people feel confident that the garbage is still going to be picked up on time, wanted somebody who had that experience. But there are also differences with the way that Bloomberg has set up his management structure. Bill de Blasio has appointed this first deputy mayor, and the way he described it, you'd really have nearly every city agency, 40 city agencies, who would be directly reporting to the first deputy mayor. De Blasio would handle, police and education. But it seems like the first deputy mayor will really have a much larger role than any single individual did in the Bloomberg administration.
Well, let me say that there are limits to even our patience. And we have other things that we want to talk about on the show today and all kinds of great guests lined up. So we will come back at some point to Mayor-elect de Blasio and his presumed incoming police commissioner, Bill Bratton. Still to come, we have the performance activist known as Reverend Billy, who may be facing a prison sentence for his latest stunt, bringing a group of climate protesters dressed up in extinct frog masks into a Chase Bank office. And if you know the words Mipster and Islamo-fashionista, then you probably know about the viral video being widely shared right now that features hijab-wearing Mipsters, Muslim hipsters, dancing to Jay-Z Somewhere in America, and you may know why the video is drawing both praise and condemnation. We will talk about that. So a lot more to come. And we'll return to the news about the mayor and the police commissioner when it actually happens. We thank Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Puerto Politica on New York One Noticias, the Spanish language news channel. Thanks, Juan.
Thank you, Brian.
And Jill Colvin, senior political reporter for the New York Observer. Thanks, Jill.
Thanks so much.